Hello, welcome to the Grow Your Wealthy Mindset podcast, where it is all about helping amazing physicians just like you create a wealthy life free from burnout and with the financial security to practice medicine on your own terms. I'm your host, Dr. Elisa Zhang. Before we start this week's episode, I'd like to tell you about a very limited special offer. I haven't talked a lot about this on the podcast, but my biggest passion is travel. I've been to over 50 countries on 6 continents and plan to travel to Antarctica this winter. I tend to plan my own vacations because I love to have complete autonomy over how to spend my time as well as my money when I'm traveling. There have been times where I've been on tours or used a travel agent, but that's been a very small handful of trips. As a college student, I used to enjoy doing road trips and even planned my first international trip during a spring break where I went to France. I continue to travel during medical school, graduate school, residency, and fellowship, and have traveled with friends, family, my significant other, as well as on my own. I never thought about my ability to plan travel throughout the world as being anything special until recently. I recently went on a retreat to Puerto Rico and decided to go a few days early in order to explore more of Puerto Rico before the retreat. I invited some people I knew to join me for a day trip where I would act as their tour guide. One person ended up choosing not to come to the retreat last minute, and so there was an open spot on my little tour. Another person on my tour convinced someone who had come early but hadn't planned to go with us to join us for the day. About halfway through the day, this person started convincing me that I needed to help other people build a plan trips like this, including herself. So that's how Travel Planning Made Simple was born. Travel Planning Made Simple is a course and coaching program that teaches the skills to plan and travel with more fun and less stress, even when you have a modest budget. I'm currently doing a beta launch of this program for 20 lucky founding members who will get the program for only $500, which is at least a 50% discount to what it will be priced in the future. As a founding member, you will get access to modules on travel planning, coaching and Q&A sessions, and a private Facebook group. Access is for the life of the program and a minimum of 1 year from the time you sign up. It will never be offered at this price point again. You could easily pay $500 or more to a travel agent or travel advisor to help build your trip for you, though you may not realize that you're paying this price depending on their compensation strategy. Not to knock travel agents. Sometimes they really can get you a better price than you can get for yourself due to agreements with cruise lines, hotels, or other companies. But if you want to be in total control of your trip and plan your travel, then you want to take this course. Even if you're already planning your own travel, you may find that it's worth learning some skills and travel hacks that you haven't come across before. If you would like to learn more, check out the show notes for the website, which is growyourwealthymindset.mykonjabi.com/travel-made-simple. And now to this week's episode of the Grow Your Wealthy Mindset podcast. Hello, and welcome back to the Grow Your Wealthy Mindset podcast. Today, we have a special guest, Sarah Neitzel, who is a podiatric surgeon, entrepreneur, and coach. Sarah, why don't you talk more about what you do?
Hi, it's good to be on here. Thank you so much for having me. I love what you do on your podcast, by the way. So I am a podiatric surgeon. So I do foot and ankle surgery, and I have a private practice. I've been in private practice for about 8 years now. And a couple of years ago, I moved into my own space and actually opened a medical pedicure and manicure spa as well. And then I also started doing some coaching this last year. So now I'm, you know, helping other physicians get their practice start up.
Yeah. So talk more about what kind of coaching you actually do with people.
Yeah. So honestly, like when I started up my private practice, I didn't have any help, right? Because nobody shows us how to do the business side of this at all. And I had to learn like from the ground up, like P&L, you know, I didn't know what a P&L was. And I thought it actually was pronounced P-N-L, not P&L. And so I remember like sitting there Googling it in my car after my banker asked me for it. Right. So like, I literally had no clue. So now what
let's say what a P&L is. It's a profit and loss.
Yeah, profit and loss, in case anybody's wondering. Let me start you off on the right foot. But you know, I started coaching because I was like, man, if I had had somebody be able to tell me start to finish, like, here's how you set up your LLC. Here's when you need to have this done for your insurance contracts. Like, here's how to get into your own space. Here's how to like hire and run a staff meeting. So what I've put together is basically just all of my notes over the years for how to do these things. And I essentially am specializing now in like practices that are trying to go through the startup phase. So we can take you from, you know, the very beginning and I don't know anything to like, okay, let's get you launched and get you profitable within a matter of like 4 to 6 months after opening your doors.
Yes. And I brought Sarah onto the podcast because having your own business is definitely a way to build wealth, but you really want to have a business that you're building that doesn't necessarily require you in the day to day. So that's what we want to actually
get into that. Yeah.
Talk a little bit more about, right?
Yes.
And in the beginning of every business, it is going to require you day to day, but how you develop the business to the point that you can start to extract yourself from the business.
Yes. Yes. And that, you know, honestly, that's the other part of it too, is I think if I had, you know, had the opportunity to talk with somebody about, you know, kind of what my ultimate goals were and somebody had asked me the right questions about, you know, what I want to do for practice, I probably could have hit my goals of like, you know, getting associates hired and kind of slowly extracting myself a little bit down in terms of how much clinical medicine I'm doing sooner. And I could have like set that up better for success to begin with, right? Because we all need to kind of know what our long-term plan is. So.
Yeah. So talk us through the phases of growth of having your own practice.
Well, you know, I think there's no really right way to do it. But above all, you know, I think the thing to consider is you want to make sure that your business is profitable, right? So the initial phases, I just always recommend to people just start small, right? Like don't commit yourself or overcommit yourself to this, you know, huge, big space that it's just you renting and, you know, all of that. I actually am a big proponent of when you're just starting out, if you can get yourself set up with kind of a side gig, just to make sure that you're like, you have some income coming in. I think that makes you feel a lot more comfortable and a lot less like at the mercy, you know, and stress of like, oh my God, is my business growing? Am I getting patients in? So like I started in a wound care center. I just did like 2 days a week. And then, you know, the other day or two a week, I would run the practice part of it. And I did office sharing. So I've, you know, rented out space from a general surgery office it was supposed to be like for a year. And then we all just got along really well and it went for like 3 years. And then we finally needed me to be up and out because I was a little too busy. We were running out of space. But I like to recommend to people to kind of consider starting small like that. You want to keep your expenses fairly small. Because once you get through that growth phase and you start getting to that place where you're having to like hire more and more employees, then you can start kind of looking at like, what's my long-term plan of, you know, do I want my own space? Do I want to set this up with a passive income source like I did with the spa that kind of shares the office as a separate business? Yeah, those are kind of the two things. So there's kind of steps that happen. It's not as like nice of a linear graph as people want to think it is, where you start at one and you just get patients and you just keep going up and up. It's kind of a really jumbled mess of stairs, I guess is a good way to put that.
At what point did you add the spa in order to have that passive income coming in?
So I wanted to do that when I was in residency. Like that was something that I always wondered, why do podiatrists not actually have this as part of their office? You know, I mean, we understand the cleanliness requirements and the risks involved with having somebody work on your feet, I think better than anybody. And so it was one of those things I was asking people about, and all of my, you know, all my prior people that I was using as mentors were just kind of like, no, that's weird. That's crazy. Why would you do that? That's not podiatry. And so when I decided to move into my own office space, I was like, all right, I haven't heard a good reason why this is not a thing. So I'm just going to do it. We're going to see how this goes. And it was a business I was able to start on a fairly cheap budget because I essentially rented out a part of my office to myself. And I have one employee for there who is cross-trained to also work in the practice. So I was able to keep her on, you know, a payroll that was usable for both the practice and the spa. So it was something that was in the works for a while, but it took me a couple of years to kind of market research and decide if that was, you know, going to be profitable. And it's honestly been crazy profitable. I wish I had actually thought bigger because she's booked out like 4 weeks. I probably could have had like 2 to 3 techs and a much larger space to do this in. But hindsight's always 2020. So
what about setting up a satellite?
I've actually, that is the next thing. So I am considering, there are two other locations that I think would be a really good market fit for this type of a practice and spa deal. So I've actually considered in like 2024 opening some satellite offices and having the podiatry side of it be a much smaller portion and having the spa be a larger portion, because the, you know, the expense to income ratio. So like a spa is actually a lot more profitable than a medical practice is, because the medical practice overhead is so high. Like, you're lucky, you know, if you've got it below 60%, you're like killing it for your expenses in a medical practice. But, you know, in a spa, like 30% is pretty average. So spas do really well in terms of return on investment.
That's amazing, because actually I had thought that spas would have a fairly high expense for the machines that you purchase for them.
No. Well, okay, if you're thinking about like a medical spa where it's like you're buying the laser machines and all of that kind of thing, then yes. And I have looked into that too. That is a potential that I'm still tossing around. But typically those, you know, those types of machines, those are coming from companies where, you know, they're offering you financing ability, and they're also, you know, they're doing marketing for you. So that's something I consider more to be kind of like a major growth step. Like that's going to be some investment. But if you're just looking at doing basically nails, like, you know, pedicures and manicures, the equipment is like a one-time kind of deal. And then you're looking at just buying products. And I was shocked at how cheap those products are compared to the medical side of things.
Wow. Cause actually filler product is not cheap.
Right. But you think about what we buy for a medical practice, like comparatively, I'm like, that's affordable. I could do that. So,
but as oculoplastics, I love doing Botox. The mm-hmm. cost of Botox is actually a significant portion of the cost of the injection.
Yeah.
But with filler, it's even more so. And it takes quite a bit of filler to make a difference on someone's mm-hmm. face. So, mm-hmm. and the time it takes to inject filler compared to the time it takes to inject Botox, or the time it takes for me to do surgery, it to me doesn't actually seem cost effective to really get into doing more filler. And that's why a lot of nurse practitioners are hired to do filler and Botox.
So, and that, I think that's something to consider doing. You know, I mean, if you're looking at doing, because I do a little bit of that too. I actually have a foot filler that I will do in the office and within the practice for, you know, basically women and men too, but mostly it's women that are losing that fat pad underneath the forefoot, because that gets really uncomfortable. So there are, you know, some fillers that we can use to kind of make that more comfortable. And I agree with you. I think, you know, you really have to look at, you know, can you cover the cost of the injectable, you know, and then having maybe a nurse practitioner, you know, LPN or somebody do that for you.
I mean, the good thing is when a client or a patient pays for the injection, they're paying for the filler as well as the time that you're doing.
Yes.
But so you don't actually necessarily have to carry a lot of inventory. So it's not a bad way to add to your aesthetics practice.
Yeah.
But as a surgeon, the time effectiveness doesn't seem to work out.
Yes. Yeah. And I think that does depend on your specialty too, right? Like, so I have no idea with oculoplastics, like what you guys usually get reimbursed. I can tell you for podiatry, it's not great for surgery. So, and I think it was really great in like the 80s. And then, you know, for all being honest, like it's just not great now. So, you know, I still do surgery certainly, but also I've had foot surgery. So I would have preferred to have had more options when I had it for like regenerative type of treatments, like non-surgical treatment options. So that's where my practice has kind of gone, is we're doing mostly like those kind of things where it's non-surgical. And then if I have to do surgery, I'm doing more minimal invasive, because that's just what people, you know, people are into, and it's so much better for you, for your recovery. So, but yeah, I think kind of weighing that out, you know, that's part of your practice growth decisions too, is, you know, actually paying attention to and looking at your reimbursements. You know, if you're taking insurance, and if you're not, great, you can set your price, but if you're taking insurance, that's super important to look at, because you need to know where your time is being most effectively spent.
So as you're growing your practice, how do you determine financially, like how to actually go about doing that? What investments to make?
Yeah. So I think, you know, the thing I work with my clients on is the idea that really, like, above all, your business needs to be profitable. However, this can feel very, you know, kind of dirty and sleazy for some people when they think about money and making a profit. And especially for doctors, we like tend to harbor a lot of guilty mindset with that. So I've kind of developed a way for myself, because I suffer with that too. I've developed a way for myself to kind of get through this in a thought process and kind of an equation for myself where it's just numbers, right? Like, if it makes sense in the numbers, go for it. If it doesn't, you got to figure out something else. So one of the things that I use is a pro forma. And I don't know if that's something that everybody's familiar with. I definitely wasn't familiar with it at the time. It's basically a really like exciting and fancy Excel sheet that that like allows you to do kind of forecasting. So I usually provide all my clients with kind of a, you know, sample one that they can use. And you essentially get your expenses in there. You've got your programming in there so that you can figure out, you know, okay, if I do so many of this particular type of service, this is kind of what I can forecast and expect. You can put your, you know, percent growth model in there, and it will help you to reasonably and conservatively consider your, you know, growth of a new service. So when I'm looking at practice growth, I think it kind of comes in many forms, right? Like, so you can have what I consider to be kind of minor growth, and then you can have major growth. And this is part of that kind of stair-stepping that I was talking about. It's kind of a jumbled mess, but your minor growth, in my opinion, is going to be something like, you know, when do I hire a non-income earning employee? So, you know, your assisting employees, your front desk, your back office MAs, maybe your biller, because, you know, they're not technically earning income. They're helping you get it, but they're not technically earning it themselves. Smaller equipment or service line purchases. So, you know, for example, I do toenail laser therapy. And to be honest, I was able to shop around and, you know, purchase that equipment overseas for like, you know, 20% of the price that it would have been here in the States. So that went from being a major purchase to a minor purchase. And then, you know, any kind of employee training or that kind of thing. And those are minor growth, because really you can look at that and decide, you know, can I actually afford this, right? And is it going to increase my profits? And the can I afford it question has more to do for me with, you know, how much time is it going to save, right? Because as the doctor, you're the high income earner in the practice. So your time needs to be utilized to do the things that are earning the practice money. And I think we spend a lot of time doing other things, admin, charting, a lot of other stuff, right? And so, you know, if you're thinking about like hiring a non-revenue generating employee, you need to be looking at, okay, if they take this off my plate, how many more patients can I see in a day? You know, do you have the capital available? And for the smaller, minor stuff, you know, you should have a few months of expenses saved up in the practice and, you know, some money you're setting aside for that kind of thing. And then is there even a demand in my market? I think doing a market analysis is super important. So those are kind of my questions when I'm looking at a smaller, minor growth thing. If we're looking at a major growth thing, to me, that's like you're purchasing major equipment that you need to get financing on. You're moving into a new office space, like building something out that's just yours. Or if you're hiring like an income earning provider, so like a nurse practitioner, another associate physician, because I mean, those salaries are going to be a lot more than, you know, you're probably just going to have on hand realistically if you're starting out. So for the major growth stuff, you know, you're probably looking at a loan or a line of credit. And I think the way to look at that is, you know, how long before it's profitable. And, you know, especially if it's a income earning provider, how many patients, what's the minimum number of patients that that person needs to see or services they need to provide in order to pay for themselves? Like, what is that after this threshold, they will be profitable, right? So those are the questions that I typically will write down for myself. And then I start calculating my ROI. And that's a matter of what I call back math, which I don't think that's like a technical term, but basically like how much does this actually cost to run, or how much am I paying this person? And then, you know, what is the potential income that I can make from this? You know, whether that is me seeing more patients or that person seeing patients or whatever that service line is bringing in. And as long as that income is outweighing the expenses, you're good to go. Like you can take the emotion out of that. You can decide, oh, okay, then yes, this is something I want to do, or no, this does not, you know, jive with what my practice is doing.
Right. And ROI is return on investment. Right?
Yes. Sorry.
And what kind of returns, like at what level of return would you say that's worth doing? Like a 1% return investment, probably not worth it.
Probably not. Yeah, probably not. You know, I kind of like at least the 50% threshold. So it needs to pay for itself plus 50% in my mind, minimum. And ideally, it could do more than that, right? So, you know, are we good to like share numbers on this?
Sure.
Okay, cool. All right. Just so I can like kind of give an example. So you know, for a nail laser machine, you know, if you buy it here, you're probably looking at, $60,000 to $80,000 for the machine, which, okay, fine. You know, the company might offer you some financing. You can look at that, but you could also order the exact same machines overseas without the whole like done in America sticker on it. And it literally costs like, I think I paid $2,300 for my machine.
Wow.
So yeah, no, it's a big difference. You just got to kind of know how to shop. And so then, you know, looking at, okay, that's the cost of the machine. If for some reason it totally breaks, right? Because you know, if you buy it overseas, it's probably not coming with any company support. It's not coming with an owner's manual. Like you got to figure out based on academic papers what you need your settings to be. And there's the thought of, okay, if it's only $2,300, am I going to get something worth it? Or is it going to get here and it's going to be broken? And so, you know, do I mind spending $2,300 and spending that gamble? Sure. Could I just buy a new one and replace it? Yes. At that price point, absolutely. And then I looked at, you know, okay, well, what is the average for reimbursement? You know, it's a cash pay service. So what are people normally charging for this type of service? And so we actually charge less than most places do. We charge $850 for services. And we also send patients home with kind of this home antifungal kit. And the kit's cost to us is about $45 or $50. So we're really looking at, you know, $800 when you take that kit off of there. And it was a question of, okay, well, how many times do I need to do this service before the equipment's paid for? And then it takes me about a half an hour. So, you know, we looked at, okay, well, that's not going to take very long for it to pay itself off at that price point. And then it's now a matter of, is this worth having me do for my hourly rate versus hiring somebody else to do it? So the machine paid for itself super quick. I mean, we can do the math on that. Now, you know, it's like, okay, well, how much am I earning per half hour that I'm in there? And it comes out to be about $212.50. So that's under my goal for hourly at this point. And in my state, it requires that we have a master esthetician do it. Like I can't have an MA do it. I can't have a nurse practitioner do it. So that has to be somebody with laser training. So that's kind of the next step, is I'll probably bring in somebody that's a master esthetician into the practice once I've built up enough of this to be able to, you know, justify paying them. Because that's the next growth step. It's how many of these do we need to do to pay a master esthetician salary and then make a profit?
Right, because you're paying that salary for every hour she's or he is right there, not just right for the time they're doing treatments.
Yes, exactly. So, you know, we really have to decide, you know, do we private contract with somebody that only is there when they need to be there? And that might save you a little bit of money to start. Or do you decide to pay them a salary and you just really plan on marketing the heck out of it and getting enough of them in to make that worth it and then some? You know, and the other too is, it's not just, is the laser itself bringing in enough? So are you going to bring somebody in full time? And you have to be able to determine whether or not that service is actually going to cover their salary. But it's not just the service itself that's covering their salary. You also have to think, if it frees up my time to go see a new patient, like what am I then earning in addition to that? So you kind of got to think about it in a few different ways.
Yeah. I do want to rewind all the way back to when we talked about money mindset and numbers, because it's so true. So your business cannot continue to service its patients and clients and customers if you don't make a profit. So a profit is necessary for a business.
Yeah, no, you got to get over that. It's so necessary. And like, just don't let it make you feel bad about it. You know, and I still deal with that. Like I still deal with it. Every time I have to raise my prices, I'm like, oh God, I feel so terrible. But the truth is, like, if the business doesn't make money, it's not going to exist anymore. Then I can't provide service to anybody. It's done. So yeah, it's super important.
And we deserve to be compensated well for all our training and time and what we're putting in.
Yes. Yeah. Cause you're still paying for that training. Keep that in mind. Like you didn't get off the hook for that. So
right. And when we feel undervalued, then we don't feel motivated and excited to work on our business. And then the business doesn't prosper either.
Yeah. Yeah. No, I would agree with that. And I definitely noticed there is a difference if, you know, I go through phases where I'm not super excited to be at work, and it just becomes less and less enjoyable as that day goes on. And then I have days where, you know, I'm excited about the particular services we're doing and, you know, I'm excited to be there. And it's like, God, the day just goes amazing. So I think really also paying attention to like, what do you like to do? You know, private practice, you get to do stuff you actually like to do. That's the benefit of it. You're not just forced to do what somebody's telling you. So, you know, make it something you actually enjoy. That's going to make the business so much more successful.
Right. And then just makes the practice of medicine so much more fun, right? Because generally physicians go into the practice of medicine, not just to make money, right? We want to make money. I mean, we want to have good incomes for everything that we put into it, and we deserve that. Yep. But at the same time, we could have gone into business or corporate or many other things to make a lot more money. So we generally went to the practice of medicine because we have this feeling of wanting to help other people.
Yeah. And that's, you know, that is something that I think is super important, you know, but if you're not able to run your business profitably, you're not even gonna be able to help people.
And you're going to burn out not going to want to help other people.
Yeah. the burnout's real in this day and age. Like, we have to keep that in mind. So I think, you know, using kind of a system like this where you're putting your numbers into your pro forma, you're thinking through the questions about whether this is going to make sense, it does help you kind of pull the emotion out of that. You know, you don't feel quite so weird about it. And you're like, okay, yeah, I can help people and this will be successful. Great.
So let's say you've got your pro forma, you've like, okay, you've decided to like go down this path of making an investment and growing your business in terms of maybe buying a machine and adding that service line onto your practice, and things don't go per pro forma.
Yeah. Yep. That does happen. Absolutely. You know, things break, things happen, staff quits, you know, I mean, there are things that happen. And, you know, I think the biggest thing that we have for an ability is we're able to, you know, kind of pivot and make some changes if we need to. And we had to do that all the way through medical school and residency. Like, you thought you knew the answer to something and oops, we don't, right? So that was the time for the oopses. And I think we assume that we're just going to be perfect going forward. Like, we're going to only make good decisions because that's what we're required to do when it comes to patient care. Business is not going to be like that. And I think that we need to let go of that perfectionism and embrace the fact that, like, you need to trust yourself to be able to make changes as you go. So if something doesn't work, okay, it doesn't work. It's fine. Nobody died. You know what I mean? Like your business, it just didn't make a profit on that, or that was not a good choice of an employee. Okay, great. Then pivot what you're doing. Make it into something that you know will work. And we're constantly pivoting treatment plans with patients. So why can't we do that in our business? So trust your ability to do that. You know, there really isn't a wrong decision. It's just not the right time or just not quite the right thing.
And when you started your business, how long was it before you could actually really start paying yourself?
So, gosh, let's see. I hit the marketing really hard when I went out on my own and like really decided, okay, I'm going to do this. I did have, you know, the income coming in a little bit from wound care. So that was kind of my backstop, if you will. But I think from the time I was able to pay myself out of the practice, I think it was probably 3 or 4 months.
Oh, that's fantastic.
Yeah. And, you know, and I did the spa the same way. Like, the spa was profitable in 3 months. So I think there's ways to set that up where your expenses are low enough. And if you know your market well enough, you can do your marketing and you can get there pretty quick.
And you did talk about doing your market research. How do you actually go about doing that?
Mm-hmm. You know, there's different ways of doing it. One of the things that I have done for sure is I have just like looked at, you can actually search what Google terms are like the most prevalently being searched for. And so when I've added new service lines, I have literally typed in there like heel pain, shockwave therapy, and seen like how often are people looking for that? Well, people look for heel pain a lot, but they're not necessarily looking at shockwave. That's not something that is very well known outside of those of us academically that know that that works really well. So I knew for that, I was going to have to probably push that more in terms of a non-surgical or non, you know, injection option. So I've looked at it, you know, Google search wise. I've also just kind of started asking patients. So once I had, you know, some established patients that came in for, you know, toenail fungus, I just straight asked them, hey, if I had a laser and that was out of pocket. Is that something that you would be interested in? And you just get some responses. You know, I had enough people that were like, oh my God, yes, because I don't want to have my toenail taken off. You know, it's like, well, yeah, the alternative is either medication that really hurts your liver or we remove it. So, you know, yeah, they were pretty excited about that. So I felt comfortable given its price point with going ahead and making that investment. So sometimes it's just kind of asking around as to what services you think would be available. I did that with the spa. A lot of my clients that were getting, you know, nail and callus care pretty regularly, that were afraid or you know, not medically safe to get pedicures at a normal pedicure spa. It was a question of, hey, if this was a thing that was available, is that something you'd be interested in? Like, do you know anybody that'd be interested in that? And I got an overwhelmingly positive response. So that was an easy thing. So yeah, that's the kind of market research. I think it's just a matter of like asking the right questions at the right time. There's not, you know, some big marketing thing you need to go out and do. I mean, you can hire a marketing company to give you some data, but I think you getting a sense of what your patients and clients actually want is probably a better way to go.
Yeah, I think those are great suggestions and advice. All right. So thanks so much for coming on. Where can people find you if they want to contact you or connect with you or maybe get some coaching with you if they're thinking about starting their own practice?
Oh, yeah. So probably the best way to contact me is you could do the contact form on the coaching website, and that would be fine. It's www.visionarypracticesolutions.com, or you can just email me directly and it's going to be Dr. Sarah VPS. So Dr. and then Sarah VPS at gmail.com.
And then are you on social media at all? Is there anything people should be following?
You know, I am. I gotta say, like, I typically have a little less social media presence. I'm just not really that person. A little more introverted than that. But I do have an Instagram handle that is, I think it's Dr. Sarah VPS. That one's on there. And then we have there's a Facebook page for Visionary Practice Solutions also. You can kind of be searched that way. But I'm usually email and directly through the website is probably a better way to get a hold of me.
Yeah. So this just shows you can have a successful practice without having a huge social media presence.
Yeah, no, I'm not as big into that. I don't think people really go on Facebook looking for doctors. Like that. It's just not where you usually go. Like you go, you know, Google Yelp, you look at reviews, but yeah, not as big in the social media sphere on that.
Yeah, I think it probably varies quite a bit. I think potentially maybe pediatricians who are, you know, marketing to a different age range.
I could see that. Yes. Yeah. And that's the thing too. You know, you got to know where your clientele is coming from. Most people aren't going online talking about their feet problems. It's kind of a little more of an embarrassing thing for a lot of people. So they're not out there blasting, hey, I got a foot problem. Can somebody tell me who to go see? Whereas pediatricians, I mean, God, some of the mom groups, yeah, they'll straight ask, like, who's the best person in this area? You know, so I agree with you. I think that's a good point.
All right. Well, I've loved having this conversation. Again, thanks so much for coming on.
Absolutely. Thank you so much for having me. I really, really appreciate it. And awesome job on the podcast. And I am super, super hoping that a lot of people are listening because, yeah, you're putting out some good stuff.
Thank you. And if you think this podcast is putting out great stuff, I would love if you could leave a 5-star review. It really helps to get more people introduced to the podcast. And as always, thanks for listening to the Grow Your Wealthy Mindset podcast.
If you enjoyed this episode, I would love it if you could share it with your friends and colleagues. And now for the disclaimer. I am not a certified financial planner, accountant, or attorney, and nothing I say should be construed as professional investment, tax, or legal advice. This show is primarily for your education and entertainment. I am a physician, but I'm probably not your physician. So if you need any medical advice, please contact your own physician. Thank you.